फ्रेंड्स द अदर सब हेडिंग और सब यूनिट इन दिस चैप्टर ऑफ ग्रीक क्रिटिसिज्म ऑफ एरिस्टोटल इज द थ्री यूनिटीज एरिस्टोटल्स व्यूज लेटर हिस्ट्री मॉडर्न कंसेप्शन. द ड्रामेटिक यूनिटीज आर थ्री, द यूनिटी ऑफ एक्शन, द यूनिटी ऑफ टाइम एंड द यूनिटी ऑफ प्लेस. एवर सीन्स द रिनेशा two regions were advanced in support of the three unities. First, that Aristotle had enjoined them, and secondly, that they are necessary to create dramatic illusion and in this way to make the drama credible and convincing. During the pseudo-classical era, the unities were made into rigid rules and their observance was considered essential. The unity of action. The three unities were deduced from Aristotle, but the Greek philosopher has stressed only one unity, the unity of action. The action of tragedy, he says in the Poetics, must be a complete whole and it must have organic unity. Aristotle compares the plot of a tragedy to a living organism and says that just as in a living organism, every part is harmoniously related to each other and to the whole, so in tragedy also the various incidents and events must bear a proportionate and harmonious relationship. Just as in a living organism, no part is superfluous and each part is essential for the life of the organism and cannot be removed without causing injury to it, so also in the plot of a tragedy, every event and every incident must be necessary and essential. There should be nothing superfluous. It should not be possible to take out any character or incident without causing any injury to the plot. Digressions and episodes may be introduced, but then they should be integral to the plot. They must be made an integral part of the plot and must contribute to the effect which the dramatist wants to create. It should not be possible even to transpose them, that is to shift them from one place to another. Aristotle regards episodic plots as the worst, for they are plots in which the episodes have not been properly interlinked with the main design and do not form an organic part of the whole. Failure in episodizing is the worst fault, for it is a violation of the unity of action. Ways in which it is achieved. It is the unity of action which makes the plot intelligible, coherent and individual. The unity of a tragic action is, says Butcher, an organic unity, an inward principle which reveals itself in the form of an outward whole. There are a number of incidents, events and situations, but they are so united and so related structurally that they form a complete whole. These various events are united in two ways. First, they are connected with each other by the law of necessity and probability. They are probable and necessary under the circumstances, and they follow each other logically and inevitably. Thus, there is a logical link up of the various events, a sequence of cause and effects binding them together. Secondly, they are unified by the fact that they all move forward and towards a common goal and catastrophe aimed at by the dramatist. The beginning leads logically and inevitably to the end, without any unnecessary digressions and episodes coming in between, without there being any detached scenes or incidents. In this way, there is unity in variety. There are a number of events and scenes, but they are all converged to a single point logically and inevitably. Digression and episodes may be permitted in the epic, but drama is a compact whole from which all superfluity is rigorously excluded. The tragedy, therefore, has greater concentration, greater coherence, so greater effectiveness. The other subheading is an inward principle. Aristotle's conception of the unity of action is not a formal and mechanical one. It is an inward principle and not a mere imposition from without. He himself tells us that unity of plot does not, as some persons think, consist in the unity of hero. For infinitely various are the incidents in one man's life which cannot be reduced to unity. And so, too, there are many actions of one man out of which we cannot make one action. Unity of action cannot arise merely because all the different incidents happen to a single person. As a matter of fact, artistic unity requires a rigorous process of selection and ordering of material. The tragic action or the tragic plot is a process of change, a change from happiness to misery. All such events which do not contribute logically and inevitably to this process of change must be rigorously eliminated. The artist need not follow the chronological sequence of events. He may transpose events and incidents to reveal with greater clearance and coherence the onward march of the hero towards his doom. Many other events may befall the hero, but if they are not relevant to the end, they are to be excluded from the plot. The other subheading is double ending. Tragicomedy, T-R-A-G-I, tragicomedy. There might be a large variety of incidents, but Aristotle rules out plurality of action. There should be one action or plot and not two actions. Thus, he is against the introduction of a subplot. Similarly, he is against a double ending, that is, tragic end for some of the characters and a happy end for the others. Plurality of action and such double ends distract attention and weaken the tragic effect. They defeat the very purpose of tragedy, which is to arouse the emotions of pity and fear. Aristotle thus rules out tragicomedy and the introduction of comic relief. In this respect, it should be noted that Elizabethan drama, more particularly the plays of Shakespeare, have demonstrated without a shadow of doubt that the introduction of comic relief increases the entertainment value of tragedy and heightens the effectiveness of catastrophe by contrast. Tragicomedies are nearer to nature. Tears and smiles, joys and sorrows mingle in life, and so they must also mingle in drama. Aristotle's rigid separation of the comic and the tragic, the gay and the serious, is not justified. The other subheading is unity of time. Aristotle has stressed only the unity of action. He says nothing about the other two unities. However, unities of time and place have also been derived from him. Aristotle's comment on the length of tragedy gave rise during the Neoclassic period to doctrine of unity of time. According to this doctrine, which became literally a critical dogma in 17th century France and in Restoration England, when Aristotle asserts that tragedy attempts Tragedy attempts as far as possible to remain within one revolution of the sun. He is referring to the time covered by the dramatic action of the play. This interpretation accords with rationalist bias of neoclassic critics. Spectators, they argued, would not believe in the reality of an action that compressed several days, or in the case of Shakespearean drama, several years, into a 3-hour drama. And if the spectators did not believe in the reality of the action, the tragedy would not have its proper effect. The idea was carried to absurd extremes. In France, the critics began debating earnestly as to whether one revolution of the sun meant a 24-hour day or the 12-hour period of daylight. Ideally, of course, the neoclassicists believed that there should be an exact correspondence between the time of dramatic action and the time of the events being limited, so that a play lasting 3 hours would depict events that took only 3 hours to work themselves out. Unity of time is one aspect of a larger neoclassic concern for what is called verisimilitude, or likeliness to truth. This concept is based equally on a highly rationalistic theory of what audiences will and will not believe, and a Platonic, not Aristotelian, theory of imitation as mimicry. It underlines all the three unities attributed to Aristotle by neoclassic critics: unity of action, unity of time, and unity of place. And it also has important implications for characterization, language, and even versification. The tendency of the 20th century critics has been to reject the notion that Aristotle formally advocated unity of time in the Poetics. In the first place, not all Greek tragedies confine their action to a single revolution of the sun. In this sense, Agamemnon and Eumenides, Agamemnon, Agamemnon and Eumenides, Eumenides, are well-known examples of plays that cover several days. In the second place, neoclassic verisimilitude is a demonstrably false doctrine, and one that is inconsistent with Aristotle's explicit rejection of the theory that poetic imitation is a copying of the facts of nature. The most common solution of the problem is summed up in Bywater's observation. What Aristotle actually says is not a percept, but only an incidental recognition of a fact in the practice of the theater of his age. This may be satisfactory, for it is true that Greek tragedy has a general tendency to limit the time of a dramatic action in spite of expectations already mentioned. Aristotle was here not laying any rules. He was simply making a suggestion, and so added the saving clause as far as possible. The other subheading of this chapter is Unity of Place. The unity of place Aristotle doesn't even mention once. While comparing epic and tragedy, he merely says that the epic may narrate several actions taking place simultaneously at several places. But this is not possible in tragedy, which doesn't narrate but represents through action. This change remark led Renesha and neoclassic critics to hoist the unity of place on Aristotle and on the basis of his authority to make it into a rigid rule for dramatic composition. It was said that in the drama there should be no change of place, and even if the scene changes, it must not be too great a distance. It was laid down that it should be confined to the limits of a single city. No doubt, the unity of place was generally observed by the Greek tragedians for several obvious reasons. There were no drop scenes and no divisions into acts and scenes, and so naturally the action was continuous and unbroken. Moreover, as Lessing suggests, the limitations of time and place were necessary in order that chorus might not seem to be kept too long away from their homes. The same group of persons could not be transported to different places, too distant from each other, without violating dramatic illusion too flagrantly. FLAGRANTLY. Whatever may have been the practice of the Greek drama, Aristotle does not prescribe the unity of place, and Shakespeare's plays demonstrate that the unity of atmosphere is not violated and the dramatic illusion can be kept up even when the scene shifts from Sicilia to Bohemia or from Venice to Cyprus. Further, Shakespearean drama is entirely free from that narrow and cramping effects of unities which mars a number of French plays. Conclusion. Unity of action, which Aristotle rightly emphasized, is the higher and controlling law of the drama. If the unity of action is maintained, the other two unities will take care of themselves. The unities of time and place are only of a secondary and purely deprivative value. In England, Dr. Johnson gave a death blow to the unities, and nothing has been heard of them ever since. Their interest now is merely historical.